Hello, and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Infectious Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Jacqueline Meredith. This episode features information about increasing meningococcal vaccine uptake. During this podcast, Dr. Necka Holder discusses strategies to improve meningococcal vaccination rates in adolescent patients. For more information about Dr. Holder and for a link to the full online educational program, please visit the link in the show notes. Now let's get started and hear what she has to say about this topic.
Hello, my name is Necka Holder, and I am an attending physician with MedStar Georgetown University Hospital. I am in the Department of Pediatrics and practice especially in the Division of Adolescent Medicine. I am also an associate professor at Georgetown University School of Medicine in the Division of Pediatrics. So we'll start off with a case. You are seeing JM, who is a 16-year-old patient who has come in today for his annual checkup. He is interested in running cross country in high school. And so his mother brings him in for his pre-participation sports clearance. Upon review of his medical history, he has remained healthy, but you do notice that he has not been to the office for the past 4 years, and he is due for his meningococcal booster vaccines, and you would like to also discuss meningitis B vaccines with him. Adolescents in general tend to have poorer immunization rates when compared to their younger pediatric counterparts. And there are several reasons for this. One being that adolescents typically don't visit medical providers unless they have ongoing health problems or unless they're mandated for whatever reason, such as mandatory school physicals or typically sports physicals, to come in for routine medical care. It is not uncommon for adolescents to be behind on their immunization schedules, particularly when compared to their younger pediatric counterparts. One of the immunizations that adolescents tend to miss are meningococcal vaccines. Meningococcal vaccines are typically given at starting around age 11, where the meningitis vaccine that protects against types A, C, W, and Y are given. And typically that is co-administered with the human papillomavirus vaccine, as well as the tetanus and pertussis booster vaccine. And there are recommendations to have that Men A vaccine, as people like to refer to it, given a booster dose or age 16. There's also meningococcal B vaccine, which is typically offered starting at age 16 and is recommended as adolescent patients approach adulthood. In terms of adolescent patients, typically immunization rates for pediatric patients, particularly for patients between the ages of 0 and 5, have very high immunization rates in the United States due to school entry requirements. However, those visits tend to drop off as patients enter into school, and they definitely taper off as children become adolescents. The frequency of routine well visits does taper off, and so that decreases the opportunity for providers to offer preventive strategies, including immunizations. So one way to get kids back into the office, particularly for their meningococcal vaccines that have been shown to be helpful, are school mandates. Most school districts do require that young people be protected, especially against meningococcal ACWY and against tetanus and pertussis. And so typically, in order for children to be enrolled in school, they have to show proof of immunization against those two diseases. Most colleges do also require that the booster dose for men ACWY be administered before entry into college. Men B vaccine mandates are not as widely available or not as widely an issue for colleges, but there are some colleges that also require men B for entry into college. School mandates are helpful at improving immunization rates for adolescents, but there are exceptions, and it can vary by location and by school district. And parents also are able in many places to opt out due to religious or moral exceptions. And again, the fine print about school mandates is that sometimes school mandates may not require actually administering the vaccine, but may require that certain school districts at least inform parents so that they're educated about the vaccines. Many experts in adolescent medicine have proposed that we be more intentional about really encouraging that our adolescent patients come back in for more routine visits, tying it in with anticipatory guidance and preventive screenings, and administering immunization. So that includes bringing kids back to the office and really being intentional with parents and with other strategic players such as insurance companies and office staff. Other strategies to really encourage that adolescents are seen more frequently for preventive health visits are to give reminders and for patients and parents to have them come back for their annual visits. And so if you are seeing them, to make it easy in the office and make that follow-up visit before they leave the office, or even to get a number that the patient is comfortable giving, such as a cell phone number where text messages could be sent to gently remind parent that they need to bring their young person in for their preventive health visit and to get their immunizations updated. Some of this may be limited by certain insurance plans. Some insurances for patients who are underinsured, this may be challenging. So providers could continue to be creative about working with their practice managers and with insurance companies and really helping them understand the importance of seeing adolescents ideally on an annual basis. But if not, then definitely bringing them back in for their immunization visits. Another way to improve adolescent immunization rates is to use alternative sites. And so not just relying on the provider visit. This was something that we had to really, really ramp up with the COVID-19 pandemic, using places such as school gyms or our local pharmacies to also be that a place, point of contact for patients to receive their preventive immunizations. Another way to improve immunization access for adolescent patients is to establish quick visits or immunization-only visits in the office, and that entails typically having a nurse be available for immunizations only. And that way the office visit tends to be much, much faster. We were typically doing this at the height of the pandemic, where some providers I know were quite creative and meeting patients in their vehicles to administer vaccines. Now, this nurse-only immunization does work well, particularly with booster immunizations, may not work as well for the initial immunization, such as the initial MenACWY, because parents and the young person may have questions, but typically with a booster vaccine, people tend to have fewer questions, particularly if they tolerated the initial dose quite well. Informing patients and parents about the need for the booster MenACWY vaccine, and especially the need for the two-dose MenV vaccine, that is important to particularly share with parents and patients during the office and trying to make sure that immunizations are discussed at every visit, even if immunizations are not due at the time of the visit. So for example, I've had patients come in for their 16-year-old visit, as in the vignette, and the young person, as is typically the case, may have an important event within 48 hours of receiving the immunization, such as an exam, or an important life event where the young person is not ready to perhaps deal with potential vaccine side effects such as fatigue or arm soreness. And so I've had patients come back, and they do. They come back and schedule a nurse-only visit within a few weeks to get those booster vaccines that we've already discussed in the office. And it is quite convenient for parents. So one thing that providers may find quite easy to initiate is to discuss the vaccine schedule, the importance of the vaccine, and if patients are unable to receive the vaccine on the day of the visit, to really make it easy and have them strongly encourage them to come back for a quick nursing-only visit, just to make sure that they are able to get their vaccines within a timely fashion. Of course, since the pandemic, we've had to play a little bit of catch-up because schools weren't in person during the height of the pandemic. And so some of our patients may be a little bit off schedule as school districts are now opening up and children are returning to in-person schools and in-person activities and events. Another way to improve our visits for patients particularly as they approach adulthood, is really setting the expectation for parents that young people still need to come and see their provider for their annual visits to screen for health problems, but also discuss healthy decision-making and discuss any risk behaviors, and again, enforce the importance of preventive care, such as immunizations. So vaccine hesitancy has definitely come to the forefront, particularly since the development and rollout of vaccines against COVID-19. And vaccine hesitancy, as we know, is multifactorial, and that includes some misinformation, which includes myths about immunizations in general. Some vaccine hesitancy is probably rightfully earned due to mistrust of modern medicine. Unfortunately, modern medicine has not always been historically ethical in certain patient populations, and so vaccine hesitancy is well earned in certain patient populations. Addressing vaccine hesitancy is important, and one tool to address vaccine hesitancy is to educate patients and parents about the rigorous science that goes into vaccine development, and even before vaccines are approved. There are rigorous and several studies that go in to place to ensure that vaccines are safe and effective prior to it being approved for use in the population that it's intended for, but also to really encourage shared decision-making. I have found in my practice that patients and parents tend to respond better when they feel that they have a voice in how their healthcare is managed. And ensuring that patients and parents don't feel coerced or forced, and really giving them time to read about information on their own, and always keeping the door open to come back and if they have more questions, but definitely not using immunization or vaccine refusal as a reason to not have the conversation, and really continue to have these conversations, even in for parents and patients who are hesitant about vaccines. And so in my practice, for example, my patients know that I will discuss vaccines, even if it's something that they told me they're not interested in. I will still discuss the importance of vaccines at every visit. For meningococcal vaccines, I do find that people tend to have lower rates of vaccine hesitancy when compared to things such as the annual flu vaccine or the COVID-19 vaccine. I suspect this is probably due to the fact that vaccines to protect against meningitis have been available for quite some time, for the better part of, I believe, 15 years. I'm able to give my patients concrete examples in a very quick form of what meningitis is and the difference between viral meningitis and bacterial meningitis and the sequelae of untreated bacterial meningitis, which are basically either death or complications such as hearing loss, limb loss, which are the big ones, and they do tend to resonate, particularly with young people and with their parents. Addressing vaccine hesitancy in the office, particularly with a minor and their parents, a few things need to be taken into consideration. In general, minors, when it comes to their health, are allowed to have what's called assent, and their parents are the ones who give consent to treatment and to care. It does become a little bit more involved if one of either the parent or the child is hesitant towards a vaccine. In my experience, a younger adolescent, so 11 or 12-year-old per se, may be hesitant towards a vaccine, but really they're more hesitant towards the discomfort of receiving an immunization. Parents in general will override that because parents are able to understand the outcomes of what can happen to their child if their child is not given a vaccine. It becomes a little bit more challenging the older an adolescent gets as they approach young adulthood, because again, you do want to encourage them to start to advocate more for themselves and to become better consumers of healthcare. There are certain regions where an adolescent as young as 16 is able to consent to immunizations, without parental notification, one of them being the District of Columbia, and another one that comes to mind is the state of New York, but that's not universal across the United States. If you have a young person who is interested in getting the immunization and their parent is somewhat hesitant towards the vaccine, it's really important to enforce that shared decision making and help the parent arrive to the point where they are comfortable getting their young person protected against meningitis disease. As a young person achieves the age of consent, which in most places across the United States universally is accepted at age 18, the young person can come back and get their immunizations and any other catch-up immunizations that are due. So in summary, one of the things that I can say I'm proud of as a pediatrician is that we are very good at offering preventive health care, but especially immunizations, right? Immunizations has been one of the greatest achievements in public health. And as a pediatrician, I can say that I'm very proud to be along those ranks of providers who routinely offer immunizations in our practice. We do have some work to do to improve our immunization rates for our older kids, and those would be our adolescent patients, and really, really being creative about and strategic and intentional about improving our immunization rates for our adolescent patients, particularly against immunization, particularly against meningitis disease, bacterial meningitis. And that would include developing immunization platforms to bring our 11 and 12 year olds back into the office so they can get their initial meningitis vaccine, and also reminding parents and patients to come back again for their booster MenACWY vaccines. And at that 16 year old visit, also letting them know that there's an immunization to protect against meningitis B and to come back for the booster.
Thank you very much to Dr. Necca Holder, and thank you to our listeners for joining in. As a reminder, to view the full Sweet 16 Time to Complete Meningococcal Vaccines program on the Clinical Care Options website, click on the link in the show notes. And please be sure to check back for more episodes on important infectious disease topics. Thank you.